Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, the bastion of militant moderation, where we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Please be sure to visit our website at alannathan.com for podcasts and showtimes. Well, the Democrat Party is in total disarray going into this week. Stories are popping everywhere about how different Democrats are trying to figure out what went wrong in the last election. I guess they kind of know that. That isn't really that big of a mystery. But what are they going to do next is the big question. And it is interesting to see this level of, I would say, near panic on the Democrat side, when traditionally the party out of power, the Democrats, the guys who don't have the White House, they usually do pretty well in the midterm election. And a lot of analysts think the Democrats are likely to pick up seats, maybe take control of one or both houses of Congress in the coming election. And a lot of that is going to have to do with the Republicans and what they do. And they're a whole different story. They got their own problems. But over there in Democrat land, they really don't know what to do next. They're beside themselves with how to organize the party. There was a story that popped this week that a lot of Democrat power players think what they need to do is purge the party of Barack Obama. They think he's the problem, him and his people are the problem. And of course, if you've been following the saga of the senile president, you know that a lot of people think Biden was basically a meat puppet from minute one, and it was really Barack Obama and his people behind the scenes that were running the White House, running the Biden administration, making all the decisions that actually matter. And that's a very plausible theory. It's very possible that even Obama himself was personally involved in doing all that. Also, Obama is widely suspected of having orchestrated the sabotage of President Trump's first term, which was a massive, I think, scandal that has never really been examined. It probably never will be in the detail that it deserves. But I mean, you talk about an insurrection when the outgoing president keeps a power mechanism in place and has loyalists riddling the hyper-politicized government whose job is to sabotage the guy who won the election. That's a problem in a democracy. That makes a mockery of democracy. And so there are people on the Democrat side, apparently growing number of younger Democrats, which is kind of funny because Obama was always supposed to be so appealing to young people. But they think the clammy hand of Barack Obama needs to be peeled off this party if they're to have any chance of rediscovering themselves and reconnecting with American voters. Now, there was a story that popped on Fox News earlier this week, I think it was on Monday, and that the Democrats have decided to spend $20 billion on a study of why they lost American males in the last election. And that's, I mean, it is joke fodder, obviously. I mean, as soon as this story broke, the smart guys on Twitter lit up the internet with mockery of this, you know, and it is funny and pitiful that they think what they need to do. And it's very instructive, by the way, that this report, it's called Speaking with American Men, a Strategic Plan. And the purpose of the report, the subtitle, is that it's going to study the syntax, language, and content that gains attention and virality in male spaces. I mean, there's your problem right there, guys. You have no instinctive understanding. You have no empathy for what ordinary people go through. And it really isn't just men. I mean, they think they have some huge sex gap here, and they don't know how to talk to men anymore because the polls show women, especially single women, continue to be the Democrat Party's strongest power base. And so they think their whole problem is they can't talk to men. That's not entirely true. They can't talk to married women either. They lost married women in droves over the last few elections. So it isn't really just men they're having a problem with. So there's problem number one. This is the Democrat Party still telling itself fairy tales that the only reason Kamala Harris isn't the president today is that a bunch of smelly men did not fall in line behind her, that men are the problem. But it is a little interesting that here the premise of this report is that the Democrats have a problem talking to them. Now, they're Democrats, so the way they phrase this is that they have to learn their language. Like the great biologist Diane Fossey used to go into the jungle to study gorillas. That's what this is. They think they have to go study the gorilla-like American male and figure out what makes that weird species tick, so they can figure out how to trick you. I mean, syntax, language, and content. They're talking about tricking you. They need to figure out how to sculpt their propaganda to regain the attention of the American male. The real problem here is that the Democrat Party is so out of touch with ordinary Americans, they might as well be a flying saucer headed out past the orbit of Pluto into interstellar space. What are the big issues of the Democrat Party? Illegal alien criminals. They think as many of them as possible need to be flooding our streets as fast as they can. Madcap, out-of-control spending taxpayer money on illegal aliens, big priority of the Democrat Party, picking your pocket to fund services for foreign nationals and so on. These are the Democrat Party's issues. Of course, American men are not interested in that, including Hispanic men, black men, and every other kind of man. People that have to work for their living, that are tax-paying, hardworking citizens, are not interested in a party whose stated top goal is helping people cheat and servicing weird little constituencies like transsexuals with infinite power to force everyone to accept their agenda. I mean, you're never going to sell that. One thing about the Democrat Party that really went off the rails over the last few years is that after they legalized gay marriage back under Obama, when that happened, and they legalized it with a Supreme Court decision, they thought at that moment the entire species, the entire American race, so to speak, had swallowed gay marriage hook, line, and sinker and were no longer in any way antithetical to homosexuality. That's not true. I mean, they don't hate them. They're not homophobic. That's another fairy tale they tell themselves, that it's an irrational fear and it's loathing and hatred and stuff. Well, most people live and let live. You know, the average people don't have any ill will towards people that are gay and so on, but they're not on board with reconstructing all of society to service strange variant sexualities. And I think there is a growing awareness at a very bone deep level in American society and increasingly in Europe that there are some things a civilization has to do in order to survive. And one of those things is men and women have got to get together and make babies. And if nobody does that, there's not going to be anybody around to claim the future. Or there will be, but they won't be Americans. They won't be like you. Somebody else will come in and take over, which the Democrats are all in favor of, because that's what open borders is all about. So, I mean, there's your problem right there. People are on to you, Democrats. That's the reason you lost touch with American men. They know you're hostile to them at a bone-deep level. At best, the Democrat Party looks at normal American men and married women, I hasten to add, because they're almost indistinguishable in their politics. They look at these ordinary people, and they see a weird alien species. They see gorillas in the mist. You know, they need to understand you like some other life form. So that's going on. Meanwhile, you've got Jake Tapper out there with his book trying to absolve the media of lying to keep Joe Biden in party. And I think personally that one of the big reasons for the panic and hysteria that's gripping Democrats over the past couple of weeks is the reaction to Tapper. Because this book is a bomb. I mean, everybody is mocking it. Nobody's buying it. It's been torn to shreds. Tapper's been humiliated every time he goes on to any kind of a conservative show. Anybody that's not hook, line, and sinker for the left-wing media. And they just blow him out of the water. They just roll the tape of all the things he was saying to keep Biden in power that he now insists he never said. He's just getting humiliated. And I think the Democrats as a party are terrified that this effort to rewrite history is not working. And people are angrier about Biden as the president than they thought. Democrats thought people were going to get over that and forget about Joe. And they could do a little cleanup with Tapper's dumb little book and rewrite history and say, oh, well, you know, of course we knew he was senile all along. You know, we were as fooled as you were. And it's not working. Nobody trusts the mainstream media anymore. No one is inclined to forgive them for lying to keep Joe Biden in power. The real story here remains, how did this happen? How did the entire media become so credulous, so easily fooled in their account or in reality? How did they become so partisan that they were willing to just take talking point orders from Karine Jean-Pierre in the White House and whoever was running the Biden administration? They were incurious about the biggest story, maybe one of the biggest stories in American history, is this swindle to put Joe Biden in the White House. Because I got to tell you, there were people exercising presidential authority. And we are starting to get real close here to find out who they were. We don't know yet. We still don't know who the shadowy figures that were running that auto pen and making decisions for Joe Biden were. But we're going to find out. The Trump administration is going to find out. They're going to expose them. And those people are guilty of treason. And that can be punished with death. Now, it won't be. I think maybe it should be. I think we should make examples out of these people so that this never happens again. But at the very least, they're in heap big legal trouble. They're going to go to jail, or Washington being the way it is. They're going to be tried and it's going to be spectacular and somehow they'll get out of it at the last minute. But people are really angry about this. They're not falling for Jake Tapper's spin. They are not forgiving the media for lying and propping up Joe Biden in power. They're increasingly conscious of all the things that went wrong under Joe Biden, and they don't trust his party anymore. And that's a big problem. You can't really fix that by learning how to speak mail and talk to the gorillas in the middle. The whole country doesn't trust you anymore. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
It's no secret that everyone wants to live a healthier life, but how many of us really do what it takes to make that happen? A new book lays out easy steps you can take to bring you closer to that goal. Dr. Brian Clement is the author of Quantum Human, an easy-to-read guide to wellness that provides a historic and scientifically validated roadmap on how to stop aging, prevent disease, and getting the most out of life.
Our many years of research have led us to realize how important it is to pay attention to our foods, our thoughts, and the activities we participate in. And more important is our relationships and sense of community.
Dr. Clement's message is one of empowerment. He says that each of us can harness energy and raise our biofrequency through conscious actions. And by doing so, we can heal ourselves and contribute to a more harmonious and connected world.
It's no mystery in Quantum Human we have explored the science of energy healing and the human potential and show how everyone can improve their lives and take their health back.
For more information, visit BrianClementPhD.com.
Funko's iconic pop collectibles, the vinyl figures with large signature heads inspired by pop culture characters and celebrities across film, TV, music, sports, and more, are a global sensation. Now, Funko's custom Pop Yourself line offers everyone a chance to create personalized pop replicas of themselves, friends, and loved ones. Skip the boring gifts this season and give dads and grads the gift of Pop Yourself, a personalized gift that's just as unique as they are. Graduation gowns and Father's Day accessories are just a few of the options to personalize your perfect pop. Jen Han, Funko's general manager of Pop Yourself.
Pop Yourself is more than a gift. It's a custom-made tribute. We're delighted to offer everyone the opportunity to create a personalized, thoughtful gift. So ditch the mug or gift card and give your dad or grad a fun, unforgettable keepsake.
Try Pop Yourself to commemorate special moments such as Father's Day, birthdays, baby reveals, or just about anything. To create your Pop Yourself, visit Funko.com.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. President Trump's big, beautiful bill, the reconciliation bill, is off to the Senate, where it's being smacked around as we speak. The stakes are still high. If nothing passes, then Trump's tax cuts from his first term expire, and Americans get walloped with a titanic tax increase, effectively, that will kneecap the economy ahead of the midterm elections. But on the other hand, a lot of conservatives are not happy that this bill doesn't have very much in the way of fiscal discipline to speak of. It doesn't really seem like a Republican bill. It still seems like Democrats are getting most of what they want. Here with us to talk about it is Kent Strang, Managing Director for Americans for Prosperity. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Great to be back. Thank you for having me.
It's a big, beautiful bill, but nobody seems to love it, really, other than President Trump talking it up. Everybody has deep reservations about this. And the biggest one coming from the conservative side, Elon Musk, is out there saying he's so disappointed that him and Doge found all this waste, and he took a huge hit personally to his business interests, to his and so forth, to do this, and nothing's being done about it. It's just business as usual, and everything's getting funded.
I understand his concern, and I think that on the Doge front, the thing that Congress should absolutely address is they should package up the Doge spending and the savings, the waste, fraud, and abuse that they've found in the administrative state, and they should package that up as a what's called a rescissions package and do that. My understanding is they have to do that separately than the current reconciliation process, but I agree with you that we should absolutely codify the Doge waste, fraud, and abuse. Have Congress put that in the rescission package, get rid of that wasteful spending and that bloat in government, in addition to passing President Trump's tax cuts.
I'm glad you brought that up. Rescission is the word of the day, the word everybody needs to learn to love, because that's what needs to happen here. And I'm a little surprised, I mean, that nobody explained this earlier. This should have been Republican messaging, President Trump's messaging, that we can't really cut spending in a reconciliation bill. That's just not how it works. What we really need is this rescission bill, and that's coming next. And he didn't do it before, but he really ought to start doing it now. Shouldn't this be what they run on in the midterms?
I think it's a yes and conversation. Look, your intro set it up perfectly in an accurate manner that if Congress fails to extend the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, it will result in the biggest tax hike in American history with those provisions and the brackets phasing out. We can't let that happen. So, yes, Congress has to focus on extending and making permanent the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act or the Trump tax cuts. But in addition to that, they have to continue to find the out-of-control government spending that we have and that we know that we have, and find the waste, fraud, and abuse, package that up as the rescission packages, and Congress should make good on their promises to cut wasteful spending. And so Congress can do both. They can pass pro-growth tax cuts that help grow our economy, provide certainty to our markets and small businesses, help Main Street, and they can also identify the out-of-control government spending and do that through rescissions, and they should be doing yes and, is my opinion.
Now, why aren't they chomping at the bit to do this? You know, and I know that if they do this, the Democrats are going to go insane, and they're going to start screaming that he's trying to kill 500 million billion people by cutting government spending. He's going to defund milk for babies and puppies and kittens. So it's going to be a tough fight, you know, no matter how absurd the spending he tries to cut is. But this should be a fight that the Republican Party wants to have. This is their high ground, and Americans are very sensitive to ridiculous spending right now. If this is the hill the Democrats want to die on, why not let them?
Yeah, I think the progressive left would make that argument whether they cut a dollar or $1 trillion. And look, we have all kinds of elements of that we know is wasteful government spending. It's pretty easy to find. And there are hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars that could probably be cut from this government. But I think the Republicans have to prioritize it because this is what they promised the American people. And this is what good government looks like. And I think it is a good thing going into midterms and simply showing people here is the bloat, here is the abuse, here is the fraud, and reining that in, I think is good politics because you said you were going to do it. Now you're going to make good on it. But I think the problem that we're running into in this particular Congress is the margin. They don't have a 30 or 40 seat majority in the House. They have a 4-seat majority in the House. And not every Republican elected is a fiscal hawk conservative. I mean, they have a lot of moderates in their tent, and it makes it harder to cut those that out of control spending. And so I think what Speaker Johnson and Scalise and others are trying to do is navigate the waters. But I am a believer that cutting spending because it's wasteful and not hurting those important social safety net programs is good politics, because I think the American people know that there's waste in government and they don't want the bloat. And I think Republicans could do an excellent job of messaging what exactly they took out and why, and how it streamlines and makes government more efficient, and how it's less intrusive in your life.
I think they could set a very nice trap here, because a lot of this spending is not only wasteful, it's counterproductive. It's financing things that are hostile to the interests of the American people. A lot of this is Democrat slush money. It goes to left-wing organizations. They pilfer it. If you put that stuff on the table and the Democrats start screaming bloody murder and saying this is all political revenge, then you can just smile and say, so you're admitting this was all political spending all along. I mean, I think this is a fight that they are going to win if they play it right. And Trump is pretty good at selling this kind of thing to people. He has the charisma to make this a sale to the American people.
Of course. I think a great example of this is the ill-named Inflation Reduction Act tax credits for so-called green new energy deals that is in the former Biden administration passed. And they had an opportunity to cut all of that, and they made some cuts to it. But, like, let's go for the whole enchilada here. We know that it's not going to result in energy dominance for America. It's not going to make your gasoline less expensive. It's not going to lead to the kind of energy that we need to run our cars and run AI systems and things of that nature. And so let's eliminate that. Then let's do things that do make energy more affordable, like permitting reform, and really get out of the way so we can have energy dominance in America. And we know that, you know, handouts to corporate cronies of Joe Biden isn't the way to get there.
I was remarking when I opened the show that the Democrats seem a lot more nervous than you would think they would be, because supposedly they think everybody is mad at Trump and regretting their vote for him and everything and so on. And the midterms are usually quite good for the party that is not in power. And yet the Democrats are in total panic. And I think one reason is that they're seeing polls that the American people do not regret voting for Trump. They're quite happy with him on balance. It's almost amazing the degree to which they are. But number two, is this the fight they're really afraid of? If the spending cuts are coming next, are they maybe a little afraid this could turn the tide of the midterm election?
I think the Democrats, are struggling because they don't have a united message. They're messaging on something different every single day. And again, Republicans need to govern. And we, at least the people I talk to, you elected Republicans to cut spending, to lower your taxes, and to make good on the promises. And I think to your point, there's a lot in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act to ensure that we don't have the biggest tax hike in American history, but also through those DOGE savings, which they campaigned on, they said they were going to do, codify that into law, eliminate the waste, the fraud, and abuse. And good policy is good politics. And so continue to do the work that people sent you to Washington to do. And let's get that done for the American people and show what you accomplished, and do it early enough to show them what you accomplished so they feel confident when they go to the ballot box in November.
That's great advice. Confidence, give them something to vote for, something positive, really important. And also, when you're trying to turn the tide of midterm election history, I think it's really important to stand on issues you know the other side will not steal from you. And there is no way Democrats are going to steal fiscal responsibility at this point. Kent Strang, Managing Director for Americans for Prosperity, thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
May is Small Business Month, and TikTok is supporting entrepreneurs at a time when they need it most with their nationwide program, Small Biz Fest. TikTok is giving away $1 million in ad credits and one-on-one support to local businesses to help them reach new audiences and increase sales. Esme Lean, TikTok's head of small and medium business.
TikTok has become the go-to platform for business owners looking to grow their audiences and to be discovered by new customers across the nation. At TikTok, we're focused on supporting our thriving community of 7.5 million businesses. And this May, we celebrate Small Biz Fest as the next step in our year-long commitment to support and supercharge entrepreneurs.
TikTok is also launching free educational resources to help businesses launch, market, and grow on the platform. To learn more about the ad credit giveaway and how to kickstart your journey on TikTok, visit TikTokSmallBizFest.com.
Circle K Fuel Day is back. Just in time for Memorial Day weekend, customers can save up to 40 cents on each gallon of fuel at the pump from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. local time on Thursday, May 22nd. The discount is applied directly at the pump, so customers can enjoy their savings seamlessly. Your purchase will also have an added benefit. To honor our veterans ahead of Memorial Day, 10% of profits will be donated to the Children of Fallen Patriots Foundation, helping military children who have lost a parent in the line of duty. As people hit the road over the long weekend, customers can stretch their dollars and help give back to veterans with Circle K Fuel Day. With 5,800 Circle K locations across the U.S. participating in the Fuel Day, mark your calendar to get your discount while supplies last. To find the closest local Circle K store offering this deal, visit CircleK.com/fuel-day.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. These first few months of the second Trump administration have been a voyage of discovery for us all, because we are slowly realizing that if you're not a Democrat, almost everything you try to do is apparently illegal. If you're a Democrat, you can do whatever you want. You can whistle up trillion-dollar new entitlements out of thin air. It doesn't matter. But if you're a Republican, if you're Trump, everything he tries to do suddenly gets slapped by an injunction from a judge. And we're being told the most amazing things. We're being told that President Trump cannot legally fire members of the executive branch, even though he's the chief executive. Those people apparently have some cosmic constitutional given right to their jobs that nobody can take away from them ever. And Trump is transgressing against that when he tries to fire them. We are currently being told that National Public Radio has a constitutional right to their money, their funding. Can't cut their funding. They're a National Public Radio. They're a state radio, state media operation. And Trump wants to zero their funding out. Nope, can't do that. They have a sacred right to every penny of their taxpayer funding. It's right in the Constitution, you guys. And it's funny because I kind of think maybe during the constitutional debates, I think Ben Franklin said that National Public Radio has to be funded in perpetuity. And I thought, you know, somebody else shot him down. I thought, you know, maybe Alexander Hamilton or somebody said no. But apparently, nope, that made it through the Constitution. So National Public Radio has an unlimited right to be funded forever from the government. This is kind of amazing to find out that this is happening right after. I mean, the contrast here is astonishing, because just a year ago, we had a senile figure puppet president in the White House, and the people that were secretly running the administration while he was in a daze could do anything. They had unlimited power to do whatever they wanted, and nobody could stop them. Nobody could sue them. No judge ever issued an injunction. Nobody stood up and said no. And there are stories specifically of the Biden administration just ignoring what courts said that they didn't like. When they were, you can't discriminate, they just kept right on discriminating. There's a story breaking right now, bubbling around the internet today, and I think it's going to be firmly reported on in the next couple of days, that there are whistleblowers inside the Biden administration who said they ignored court orders against discriminating against people, and they just kept right on discriminating against white people. They didn't care what the court said. So why did Biden have unlimited power through his handlers and Trump can't do anything? Here with us to talk about it is Sean Higgins, research fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Thanks for having me.
The chief executive of the United States can't fire executive branch employees. That's quite a racket.
Well, it's based on a Supreme Court precedent going back to 1935. Which says that certain ones, at least the ones that don't have executive power and authority, should be protected under civil service rules. And it's called Humphrey's Executor, and it's a longstanding precedent, but it's being challenged by some court rulings, court cases, and may come before the Supreme Court this summer.
It seems as if from the evidence of the past few months that if you do anything, if you're in the Trump administration and you try to restrict the power, the spending, the influence of government in any way, a judge will immediately leap out and slap you with an injunction and stop you.
Well, certainly there's a lot of institutional resistance to it. The most powerful force in the federal government, and this goes back a long time, is inertia. I mean, you ask people why they do things, and they're always like, well, this is the way we've always done it. And change to that always comes very slowly and very painfully. There's a lot of people that just sort of want to protect their own prerogatives and their own positions within the government, and so you see a lot of resistance to changes and orders and that type of stuff as a consequence of that.
Now, we as a people, as voters, we were not told any of this really over the years. We've always been laboring under the mistaken impression that if we didn't like the way things were being done, we could just vote for different people. That's how representative government works. And they tell us that whenever people would get upset or concerned about the growing power of government, or they would think it was becoming authoritarian, we would be told, hey, relax, you can just fire these bums in the next election if you don't like what they're doing. So you can't be living in a tyranny because you have the right to vote. Well, now it turns out that if you vote for somebody who wants to undo some of this stuff, everything he tries to do is illegal and the courts will shut him down. So what was even the point of holding the last election?
Well, certainly there is this there's a sort of permanent floating bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. that exists sort of separate from the elected officials. And often, and more often than not, I mean, or a lot of times, they will simply, if they disagree with something or don't like something, they will simply sort of resist and wait it out because they know that eventually the elected office holders will change or there will be a different election and a new group of people will sweep in and what the previous ones wanted to do will be forgotten. So this is one of those sort of longstanding issues that's been around in Washington for a while. Trump is challenging it in a more direct way than any previous administration, I would say.
When the Obama administration was spending a lot of money, particularly in his second term, and spending pre-COVID was just skyrocketing to levels we wouldn't see until COVID when all bets were off, I thought one of the big problems here, the thing I was warning people about, was that an army of debt was forming. That all this money was being used to hire people, and we would soon discover that those people can't really be fired. I mean, this is an irrevocable ratcheting up of the power of the state and a diminishing of the private sector, because you're going to find out that in the private sector, if your business model doesn't work, you go out of business. But in the government, if you hire people, they're basically eternal. It doesn't matter whether it doesn't work or not, or it was a bad idea. You can never get rid of them.
Certainly, that's one of the major differences with the public sector, and one of the reasons why a lot of people gravitate towards it is that sense of long-term stability and long-term protection. I mean, there are civil service rules which say what you can and can't do with these people, and a lot of them is to protect them from changes from one administration to the next. The idea is that they don't want people to be essentially to have what was a spoil system, which was the problem in the 19th century. Now, the argument now is that it's gone around the other way, and that we have too many people who are simply unaccountable to any branch of government once they get in there and can be protected over the long term. And that's what we're seeing the challenge of in what the administration is trying to do. In the case of, for example, the National Labor Relations Board, I mean, it straight up says the president can only fire them, for specific malfeasance of their duties, and they're not basically at-will employees. And the administration has said, well, no, that shouldn't be the case. That's wrong. It's unconstitutional because it's an executive branch agency that wields executive power, and this is the executive branch. Therefore, they should be at-will employees, and we should be able to demand their resignation if they're not following the administration's own policy. And that's what basically this fight in the courts is about, what will probably wind up before the Supreme Court before the summer is out.
And this seems like another argument in favor of federalism also, because at the state level, this is considerably less of a problem. I work for a company that contracted to a state agency, and we had an election, and the other party won in that particular election. And the next day, everybody we dealt with at the state was like, well, see ya. You know, we're all gone. We're all going to get replaced because a new administration is in power. It seems like at state and local government levels, it's much easier to turn things over. And maybe there is a problem, as you pointed out, with the spoils system that can occur. But it also seems very healthy that state governments can do turnover at a level the federal government can't.
And that's one of the arguments in favor of what the administration is currently doing, is that we've seen this type of more responsive state and local level governments where people can be fired for not carrying out their duties, and it hasn't deteriorated into that type of spoil system that was the fear originally. So that's one of the arguments that weighs in favor of what the administration is trying to do. It's like, look, we've had 50 states experimenting with this, and major cities doing it as well, and it hasn't deteriorated into that problem, so there's no reason why we can't do it also at the federal level.
I've always thought it would be very important to take action against public employee unions, which are ridiculous and never should have been allowed for a single day, but we've been saddled with them for decades now, and I really thought the Trump administration might declare war on the public unions. I guess they sort of have made noises in that direction, but is that a big battle we can look forward to in our future? Because it's going to pull the fight if they try to shut them down.
Well, I think the unions see it as a major fight because the administration has tried to cancel collective bargaining contracts with departments and agencies, essentially saying that they just don't have the right to have these type of organizations in the first place. This was something that was guaranteed by Carter back in the day, and it was interesting because at the time he argued it was something that would actually increase government efficiency, and time has not really shown that to be the case. But there's a big fight now as to the extent to which these public sector unions can actually be unionized and collectively bargain, because they're one of the main forces that's been fighting the changes the current administration has been trying to do with the federal workforce in the first place, literally arguing, no, they don't have a right to do this. This is against our contracts and therefore unfair. And the administration is saying, well, the contracts themselves shouldn't have been allowed. So we're going to see how that's going to play out before too long as well.
Well, the apex predator of the public employee union world would have to be in the education department, and there's a big fight brewing over the education department and Trump wanting to get rid of that. I'll give you the last word. How much can Trump really do before the midterm elections hit?
He can actually probably do a substantial amount. I mean, simply trying to cancel the collective bargaining contracts is a major move, and that's going to certainly at least provoke the Supreme Court to react and lay out exactly what the White House can and can't do, which would itself just be a significant change.
Sean Higgins, Research Fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, your guest host today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
A new national survey reveals a surprising gap between what Americans believe about dental care and what they actually do. Many say they want to keep their natural teeth for life, but their habits often don't match that goal. Dr. Stephen Katz, president of the American Association of Endodontists, explains.
Most adults say they care about keeping their natural teeth, and nearly 9 in 10 believe flossing is important. But almost 60% don't floss daily, and more than 2 in 5 wait to see a dentist until they're already in pain. These delays can lead to serious dental problems.
Tooth pain doesn't have to mean tooth loss. When problems do arise, there's hope and help from a dental specialist known as an endodontist to help save your natural teeth.
That's correct. Endodontists are specialists in saving natural teeth through root canal therapy. With the right care, even a tooth that hurts or is infected can frequently be saved. But the key is acting early. Don't wait for pain.
Learn more at findmyendodontist.com. A new AARP fraud report highlights the need for better cybersecurity habits. Kathy Stokes is the director of fraud prevention programs with AARP's Fraud Watch Network.
Fraud is becoming increasingly sophisticated, yet many Americans may still be unaware of habits that can decrease their risk. Now, millions of adults have downloaded unverified apps, or they've taken social media quizzes from questionable sources, and millions have yet to enable multi-factor authentication, which is an easy step that offers additional protection for online accounts.
The good news is that protecting yourself doesn't require a tech background.
Simple steps like updating your passwords, using a VPN on public Wi-Fi, and turning on security features can help keep your information safe.
For more on how to protect yourself from the latest scams, visit AARP.org/FraudWatchNetwork. That's AARP.org/FraudWatchNetwork.
May is Stroke Awareness Month and a chance to remind people that fast action can save lives. Neurologist Dr. Kendrick Johnson with more.
When it comes to stroke, every second counts. That's why we encourage people to remember the signs using the FAST acronym: face drooping, arm weakness, speech difficulty, and time to call 911. The good news is that stroke management has come a long way. In addition to medication, procedures like mechanical thrombectomy can remove clots from the brain and may improve recovery if done quickly.
For more, visit penumbrainc.com/stroke.
The journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. At Children International, we know that the journey to end poverty for good begins first with a child. It starts with their first checkup, lesson, opportunity, job. That journey takes commitment from people like you and me to end poverty for good. Learn more at children.org.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus,
you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. President Trump has made it a high priority to bring business back to the United States, to bring manufacturing home, to reshore American industry that has departed for other shores over the past 20 to 30 years. And a big part of that is not only using tariffs to encourage them financially to do so, but we have to prepare the ground here in the United States to welcome business and manufacturing back. We need to correct the issues that made it so profitable for them to offshore in the first place. Here with us to talk about it is Bruce DeTorres, Director of Communications at the American Small Business League and the Don't Cheat Women Project. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Thank you, John. How are you?
I'm doing well. I like the idea of bringing business home, and I do think far too much manufacturing went overseas, and it's dangerous, as we're learning. It's not just bad for us economically, but it has national security implications. But I don't think you can begin bringing business home until you change the climate here to make it more welcome for the businesses that departed in the first place. It made sense for those people to move overseas. We need to change that.
Well, I agree. And it really came from top down. That was not something we, the people, needed, wanted, or asked our representatives over the last 40, 50 years to do. It was really in collusion, Congress and the executives, the presidents over the last many decades, with long-ranging, giant forecasts, big long-range plans from the global wealthy elite. Okay, so it's a huge with decades of momentum that needs to be turned around. I love that metaphor. You know, this giant ocean liner. Let's say President Trump has spun the wheel to turn the rudder and he's pinned it to turn to the right. Okay? That ship has so much momentum, you're not going to see a change in direction for a long, long time. That's giving President Trump the benefit of the doubt because all too many of the announcements coming out of the SBA, John, to us, they really are 80-90% razzmatazz and lots of bluster and precious little that actually is going to reignite manufacturing here, because you're right. It's going to take a comprehensive investment, the likes of which we haven't heard about, to recreate manufacturing here in the United States to the end of actually reducing costs. We're so far from that from these moves. Now, every little step in that direction is good because it lets you and I talk about it and say, duh, this is part of salvaging our viability, economic survival, even national sovereignty, as I know you're well aware.
What is being done by the administration and by state governments and so on to help with onshoring? What resources are they making available to companies that do decide to come back here?
Okay, well, first of all, I want to make fun of that phrase onshoring. Okay, obviously, it's newly invented, and it's the opposite of offshoring. You know, and classically, we busy Americans think, well, we offshored our jobs and our manufacturing, so let's onshore them. as if we could just reach across oceans, grab them, and just and pull them back. No, it's so I wanted. I can't buy into that. I'm sorry. It's too immature. I'm sorry. I'm not blaming you. You're just picking up on what's coming from the top down is this cute little phrase, but it's symptomatic of the bigger problem that I was talking about. The recent announcements are bragging about the loans that are possible through the SBA, basically. Okay? And they're very loud and proud about that. But it's to distract us, John, because the SBA is the only agency in America, in the federal government, dedicated to the 99.9% of all American businesses that are small businesses. And it's great if they can back loans or help you get loans, but the staff is being cut by 43% to bring the budget down by about half. It's going to have about $500,000 budget under the current adjustments, when it should have a gargantuan budget since it represents the interests of 99% of all of our businesses. And worse than that, nothing's being said about the contracting program, whereby 23% of all federal contracts are supposed to go to small businesses. And when people go to our site, ASBL.com, you'll see that's our major issue, because we have found over the last 30 years, so has Congress, so has the Inspector General at the SBA, that they falsify compliance with that goal. We see as little as 3% of federal contracts going to legitimate small businesses. The rest has been captured by big businesses. So if you want to create jobs almost in the snap of a finger, investigate that, confirm that, and do whatever it takes to steer all those contracts to legitimate small businesses, and an extra 2 million jobs would be created every year, John, on top of the 2 million jobs every year that America typically creates.
The small businesses were such a hot topic in the 2012 election, for example. It revolved largely around small businesses. But then in the post-coronavirus era, after the lockdowns, it seems like the political class largely stopped talking about them other than vague praise. They no longer were the heart of our political conversation. But small businesses are still the beating heart of job creation and entrepreneurship, aren't they?
Yeah, they absolutely are. And I agree with your diagnosis. And therein lies a major conundrum, question mark, about President Trump and the current administration for all of his populism and popularity, because he talks about mainstream kind of things and he talks in a mainstream, not sophisticated way that many people can relate to. The moves he's making are supporting big business as usual, what we call the corporate capture of not only the executive branch, but the entire federal government. You rarely hear the phrase small business anymore, like you just well diagnosed. And most small business people and the families that rely on them are working so hard to make ends meet, it's tough for enough of them to become politically active. So you and I have got this unique ability to have our voices heard. Have to get crystal clear, and that's why we implore people to go to our site, ASBL.com, and learn this rather inflammatory accusation that I'm making. What I just told you is completely controversial, because every year the SBA announces with great fanfare, we exceeded more than 23% of federal contracts went to federal governments. But there's all kinds of loopholes and problems that make that not true.
I think it's also important for people to remember that small businesses tend to be responsive to local needs, local communities. They're very good at finding opportunities that a big business couldn't. It's just a distributed intelligence. They can work so much better than big corporations can. And I think it's time we rediscovered just how important small businesses are to our economy. Bruce DeTorres, Director of Communications at the American Small Business League. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Thanks for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.